Welcome to Red Alert Radio, grassroots radio with an ear on the issues that matter to you. Hosted by your local Labour MPs.
Kia ora koutou katoa, welcome to our Red Alert program today. I'm Anahila Kanonga Taha Suisuiki, the Labour List Member of Parliament based in Papakura and Tamaki. Hopefully you've enjoying a peaceful Anzac Day, and what our program will consist of is I'll start with the message, the Prime Minister's Anzac Day message. Then we won't have a guest, but we will talk about the end-of-life choice bill. Three things that we'll focus on that conversation. One, I'll give you feedback on the background and the time frame. I'll talk about the eligibility criteria, and I will also read from the commentary as reported by the Justice Select Committee. We know that earlier in April, the Justice Select Committee had submitted their report on the end-of-life choice bill to the House. Yes, so that's our program for today. I'm wishing you those of us that have attended the dawn service this morning, I wish you all a very peaceful day and a safe Anzac Day today. I will begin to read now the Prime Minister's message on Anzac Day. So the Right Honourable Jacinda Ardern, Prime Minister of New Zealand, Anzac Day message 2019. Each Anzac Day we take time to reflect and remember. We reflect on the ways in which New Zealand's involvement in conflict and peacekeeping has affected our country. We remember the sacrifices made by our people during these times. 2019 marks the close of New Zealand's First World War Centenary Program. The focus on the First World War these past 5 years has served an important purpose. Though the exploration of our nation's involvement in this global event, we have had occasions to reconnect with the stories and lived experiences of our forebearers. We have had cause to consider New Zealand's wider experience in conflict and taken the opportunity to acknowledge its ongoing impact on those who have served and as their families. It is timely for us today to consider the journey by New Zealanders returning home in 1919. For many, the return to Aotearoa's shores was painfully slow and far from straightforward. Although 24,000 were home by Armistice Day of November 1918, there remained 56,000 overseas or at sea. The logistics of bringing them home was something New Zealand had not previously had cause to deal with. A few arrangements went entirely smoothly. The wait was anxious for all, especially families and communities down the line. The lives of those who found their way back 100 years ago were forever changed. Many kept their inner anguish and turmoil from loved ones, and few escaped the enduring physical and emotional aftermath of war. Today our thoughts turn to our veterans, their spouses and families. We particularly pay tribute to those who served in the Second World War. A generation, sadly, has almost left us. We acknowledge their service and honour their contribution to our country. We think too of our current service personnel and their wider support community. Recently, our nation has again shifted on its axis through the terrorist attacks in Christchurch. As we gather together this Anzac Day, we recognise that there is still much division to overcome in the world today. Through our expressions of love, compassion and unity, we reaffirm our commitment to peace and freedom of faith, and we move together in hope. There was the message, or Anzac Day message, of the Right Honourable Jacinda Ardern, Prime Minister of New Zealand. So, in the past, this week also, we've had Easter. So those of us who practiced Christianity, hopefully you've also had a peaceful Easter weekend. Sadly, during the weekend, there was an event in Sri Lanka that had caused the loss of many lives, and our thoughts are with those in Sri Lanka as well. So that brings us to our second part of our program, where we are going to talk about the end-of-life choice bill. I think most people would ask why are we talking about the end-of-life bill at this time of the year. I just think that it's important to bring this to conversation, as the Select Committee has completed their work, and it's time to continue the conversation about this bill. So as you know, the end-of-life choice bill is a member's bill in the name of David Seymour. It was had its first reading in the House on the 13th of December 2017, and submissions were open and closed on the 6th of March 2018. And it is in April of this year, 2019, that the Select Committee has reported their findings to the House. And I'm not sure what the timeline for the whole of House debate on this matter, but definitely it will be in May. The duration of when this will go through the House, actually it's unknown. As it's a members' bill, it only comes up every Wednesday. That's Members' Day. And yeah, that's the time frame of the House. So again, what I'll do is I'll give you a summary of the bill. I'll talk about the eligibility criteria, and also a bit of background on how the vote went on first reading. And yeah, and I will read some commentary made by the Justice Select Committee on the opinions of those who've made submissions to the Select Committee. So about the bill as introduced, the End-of-Life Choice Bill is a member's bill in the name of David Seymour, Member of Parliament. It seeks to allow people to request assisted dying if they have a terminal illness or a grievous and irremediable medical condition. The bill defines assisted dying as the administration by a medical practitioner of a lethal dose of medication to a person to relieve his or her suffering by hastening death. So the eligibility criteria, there are six criteria, which reads, a person would be eligible for assisted dying if they, 1, were age 18 years or over, 2, were a New Zealand citizen or permanent resident, 3, suffered from a terminal illness that was likely to end their life within 6 months, a grievous and irremediable medical condition, 4, were in an advanced state of irreversible decline in capacity, 5, experience unbearable suffering that could not be relieved in a manner that they considered tolerable, and 6, were able to understand the nature and consequences of assisted dying. So those are the six eligibility criteria of this bill if this bill was to pass into law. Also, what the bill would also introduce, it will also introduce an administrative body that would be created. So the bill would create 3 administrative bodies, a support consultation for end of life in New Zealand, and its short name SCENZ, a group, a registrar, assisted dying, and an end-of-life review committee. So that's what the bill would introduce. The bill had its first reading, as I previously alluded to, and we have some few speakers speak on the bill. Those who spoke that day was, of course, the sponsor, it's himself, David Seymour, and followed by David Seymour. We had several members who spoke for and against the bill, which are the speakers on that day that spoke on the bill was the Right Honourable Bill English. At the time, he was the leader of the opposition, and he spoke on his belief that the bill should not go through the second reading. Also, Simon O'Connor, Lewisa Wall spoke in support of the bill, and several other members, Honourable Tracy Martin, spoke in terms of allowing the bill to first reading to enable New Zealanders to have a say. And several other people, including Honourable Aupito Sua William Seal, spoke about the bill and about his view that it shouldn't go through. he provided an opinion that previous years that New Zealanders already had a say in this area, and that that was sufficient for this bill not to be read first time. The second time, however, also we had Honourable Maggie Barry and a few other people. Chris Bishop, National MP in the Hutt, also spoke to allow this bill to go into the second reading. So those are some members who spoke at the first reading of the end-of-life choice bill. It was then put to a vote, conscience vote, and because this is a member's this bill actually, in terms of as described by the End of Life Choice Bill, Members Bill, as per report of the Justice Select Committee, where it says conscience vote, it read, the bill is expected to result in conscience votes by members in the House. In previous situations where a bill was expected to result in conscience votes, committees have recommended amendments that left the policy content of the bill largely intact, while trying to ensure that the bill was coherent and workable piece of legislation. So you could say, argue that the bill came back from the Justice Select Committee with not a lot of amendments, but that explains why it hasn't. So as it's a conscience vote, it is just a reminder, there's 120 members of Parliament in New Zealand, and in terms of the conscience vote, all 120 has their individual vote, and it's not a party, doesn't reflect what the party's view on the matter. So we had 70. A personal vote was called for at the first time, and 76 members had agreed, had to vote for the bill to be read the first time, and 44 people had disagreed, members of Parliament had disagreed for this bill to be read the first time. Then at the first reading, it was also put to a vote that the bill be read the first time. In the second vote, we had 61 people who voted for it, and then 39 people who voted against it. I think that's how it read on that day. Yes, so what that basically meant was that, yep, it had its first reading, and yes, it can go to Select Committee. So the process now is that the Select Committee has completed their report, and it's returned to the House for all of House debate. So that's where the bill is at the moment. The Select Committee submitted their commentary report in April, earlier this month in April, and then what would happen now is that Parliament will schedule when the bill will be heard in Parliament. So most people think that this will be happen in May. So that is the brief background on the bill as it is now. So what I'll do now is I'll talk about the submitters and what their voices had said, because I think it's important that we listen, we hear the voices of those people that had actually took time to submit to the Select Committee. So according to the commentary report, the Select Committee reported that they had received and considered 39,159 submissions from interested groups and individuals. They had oral evidence of 1,350 submitters, and they make up 77 organisations and 1,273 individual submitters. The hearings were held in Whangarei, Auckland, Tauranga, Rotorua, Hamilton, New Plymouth, Whanganui, Napier, Palmerston North and Wellington, Christchurch, Dunedin and Invercargill. So these are, what I'll do now is I will go to the part in terms of the views from various groups of submitters. So the report notes that they have heard a wide variety of submitters. Submitters were grouped into groups, health professions. I will read bits from the health professions' views. I will also read from hospices, disabled people, and of course seriously ill people and their families, and will end, if we have time, with faith-based submitters. So, as I said, the Select Committee had grouped the views of people, and as mentioned earlier, they had mentioned earlier in their report that about 90% of submissions were opposed to the bill. However, they did not include a detailed analysis of the submissions by the type of submitter. So the Select Committee couldn't actually assign proportions of the views held within each of the groups. So altogether, 10% had of the submitters have supported the bill, and 90% of submitters were opposed to the bill. I will start reading from the health professions now. So health professions held a wide range of views according to the Select Committee. This is what they said about doctors. Many doctors submitted that they do not support the bill in principle because they believe the bill has an obligation to preserve life. The New Zealand Medical Association considers assisted dying unethical. However, it did acknowledge that the medical community has a range of opinions on the bill. The Select Committee also heard concerns from doctors about the risk of complications and the administration of assisted dying. For example, some doctors doubt doctors' ability to predict trajectories and timeframes of conditions to an acceptable accurate degree. Those who raised this issue were troubled by the weight of responsibility that might be placed on doctors and the potential impact on people's trust in doctors. Others had confidence in doctors' ability to make the necessary judgments about conditions. Some doctors supported the bill on the grounds of compassion. They told us that they told the Select Committee that they have seen patients in terrible pain and known that there is nothing more that they can do for those patients. The Select Committee also heard the sentiment that doctors themselves would never want to live with certain conditions, knowing what those illnesses can involve. Some GPs, including the Royal New Zealand College of General Practitioners, were concerned that the definition of medical practitioner was too broad and could include branches of medicine ill-suited to die to assisted dying. Some of the college's members supported GPs having a role in assisted dying, while others considered it should remain outside of general practices. The college also argued that there should be a requirement for a medical practitioner to have practiced medicine for a minimum amount of time before being eligible to perform euthanasia. Some GPs also raised concerns over potentially having to refer a patient to a participating medical practitioner. They questioned how this requirement would interact with the right to conscientious objection to participating in assisted dying. Some medical professions were concerned that the impact of the bill on mental health and suicide. The New Zealand Medical Council submitted that legal euthanasia could contribute to normalising suicide. So psychiatrists and psychologists, so this is what they had to say. The Select Committee heard concerns about the requirement for a psychiatrist or psychologist to assist whether a person requested assisted dying could understand the nature of assisted dying and the consequences of it. The New Zealand Psychologist Board submitted that not all practicing psychologists would be sufficiently qualified and experienced to assess competence in the context of assisted dying. Some psychologists and psychiatrists believe the bill should include a mandatory role for them to assess all candidates for assisted dying to ensure that mental competence is properly assessed. The Royal Australia and New Zealand College of Psychiatrists said that the bill should specifically exclude people with mental illness from being eligible for assisted dying. I must make a note that I am not a member of the Justice Committee, and that most of the deliberations I wasn't part of, but I had from time to time sat and were part of the Select Committee in receiving submissions, hearing from people's submissions on this bill. According, then we will move on to the nurses. What did the nurses say? According to the Select Committee, nurses held a diverse range of personal and professional views on the bill. They heard that nurses were disappointed that the bill is silent on the roles and responsibilities of nurses. They had said that they will inevitably be involved with providing services for people who seek assisted suicide if the bill is passed. Nurses admitted that the bill should include nurse practitioners by referring to a health practitioner instead of a medical practitioner. What did the palliative care workers said? Some palliative care professionals acknowledged the complex boundaries between current palliative practices and assisted dying. The committee heard from palliative care professionals who believe that assisted dying is in conflict with the basic principle of palliative care, which is to neither hasten or postpone death. However, some palliative care professionals who support the bill said that some conditions cannot be alleviated with palliative care and assisted dying should be an option in these cases. At the same time, some palliative care professionals who acknowledged untreatable suffering said that this affects a minority of cases and an assisted dying law should not be created to cater for these cases. Some palliative care professionals should shared stories of patients spending time with loved ones at the end of their lives, describing this as special experience that they would not want to see compromised by assisted dying. Many people submitted that palliative care should be better resourced and more accessible, and if this were to happen, demand for assisted dying would decrease. The voices of hospices, the Select Committee heard from many hospices around New Zealand that opposed this bill. They argued that it was inconsistent with the hospice psychology of palliative care. They supported patients' choice in focusing on quality of life that included ending treatment, but believed good care and properly administered medication will ensure people did not suffer. They believe euthanasia would detrimentally affect their relationship with patients and families and did not believe it would be compatible with their work to provide euthanasia at hospices. The committee also heard from disabled people. The committee heard several submissions that it might not be possible to identify and implement safeguards to sufficiently protect disabled people from harm. The Disability Rights Commissioner submitted that making people with non-terminal illnesses eligible for assisted dying is not consistent with a human rights approach to legislation. The committee also heard that disabled people could be more vulnerable to coercion. Some disabled people held the view that their lives would be devalued if the bill was interpreted to mean that they would be eligible for assisted dying because of a condition that causes them to be disabled. Others, particularly those degenerative disabilities, submitted the contrasting argument that being excluded because they are disabled is discriminatory. Some disabled people were particularly concerned about the classified as person suffering from a grievous and irremediable medical condition, therefore automatically being eligible for assisted dying under Section 4 of this bill. The Select Committee also reported seriously ill people and their families. The Select Committee heard some seriously ill people support the bill for a number of reasons. Some consider that assisted dying could prolong their lives. These seriously ill people told the Select Committee that they assisted dying could prolong, that they already plan to commit suicide to prevent future suffering, but would have to do this when they were still relatively healthy in order to still have the physical capacity to carry out the act. They submitted that with legal assisted dying, they would be alive for longer because of the opinion of having someone assist them to die. This would also mean that they would die more peacefully and with family around. Other people with conditions who expected to become seriously ill in the future supported the bill because they did not wish to experience intense suffering. Some of these people included individuals who were not yet sick but had serious genetic conditions that would make them sick in the future. These submitters expressed fear of the future that awaits them. The Select Committee also reported on the views of the faith-based submitters. The Select Committee reported that several groups were opposed to the bill for religious reasons. Many of these submissions referred to the sanctity of life, the view that only God should decide the timing of life and death, and the concern that euthanasia and suicide are morally wrong and contrary to religious teachings. So also the Select Committee reported that common beliefs expressed about assisted dying, that many views about whether assisted dying should be allowed were motivated by submitters' beliefs in maintaining their life, autonomy, dignity and compassion. The views were also reported by the Select Committee. So what we've heard is that those are varying views from the submitters that had submitted, with the Select Committee has reported to the House in terms of their commentary that almost 40,000 people had put in their views, had submitted their views, and 10% of those submitters, 10% were for the bill, and 90% of those that submitted opposed the bill. The Select Committee's report also reported that they didn't specifically analyse the submitted submissions to say, of those 10%, what type of submitters were they, and of the 90%, what type of submitters were those. So that is what the Select Committee had reported. I think I'll end on this, what the cultural considerations in terms of the report of the Select Committee. The cultural considerations, the Select Committee reported that many submitters are concerned that the bill is based on Western psychology, philosophy of valuing individual autonomy. Some opponents consider that the bill is ignorant or dismissive of other cultures and their values. In particular, some submitters are concerned that the bill is inconsistent with the values of non-Pākehā cultural groups within New Zealand. Submitters describe these groups as being more collective, with an emphasis on family, community, and valuing life. The Select Committee reported on Māori tikanga, and it reported, although not all submitters who identified as Māori oppose the bill or consider it inconsistent with Māori tikanga values, others have several concerns. Submitters describe the Māori worldview, where people are part of their whānau, hapū, and iwi, where care, respect, and reverence are shown to the elderly and terminally ill. Life and wairua are valued. Some believe that assisted dying would breach the tapu or the sacredness of the person and have spiritual consequences for those involved. Some submitters consider that the bill would breach the Treaty of Waitangi. In particular, they cited the treaty's underlying principle of tiaki, protection of Māori values, and under Article 2, the concept of taonga, treasure of life. Other submitters that considered that the bill would contravene holistic models of Māori health, such as Te Whare Tapawhā, which sets out four equally balanced foundations of Māori health: physical, spiritual, family, and mental. So those are some of the views that was reported by the Select Committee. As I've said before, the journey of this bill is a member's bill in the name of David Seymour. It had its first reading on the 13th of December 2017. It went to the Select Committee, and the Select Committee asked for submissions, with the closing date for submission on the 6th of March 2018. And mid-April, the Select Committee had heard has seen 39,000 submissions for members of the public on their view on this, on their view of the end-of-life choice bill. 10% of those that submitted supported the bill, and 90% did not support the bill. So what's going to happen in terms of the bill from here onwards? It is a member's bill, and member's bills are heard on Wednesdays when Parliament sits. So it's most likely that the second reading will begin for the bill. Debate will begin on the second reading in May. So that's I felt that was important for me to bring this this topic for us to talk about. The next step is, as it's a conscience vote, but members of the public are free and in their right to consult their local members of parliament or any of the 120 members of parliament to show whether you support or don't support the bill. I am a person who voted against the bill because of my belief that we should do all that we can to restore life, and also I am a Christian, and I also hold the same firm view as the Christian submitters who had submitted before. However, I'm open to listen to all feedback. My email is anahila@parliament.govt.nz. My phone number is 0800 Anahila. You can contact me on those numbers, and I'll be back later on during the year to have further discussions on this end of life choice bill. That's me for today. Hopefully you've had wish you well on today, this Anzac Day in 2019. Have a great day and a great week. Mā roa wita o mō mea mai, ka mō mea.
Get together with your local MP next week at 9:05 a.m. Or listen online anytime on planetaudio.org.nz/RedAlertRadio.